The topic has been selected. Put your card close away, the kirtan's over. Take him from him. He's like compulsive. Envy. When you think of envy, what do you think of? Or maybe we could say, who do you think of? When you think of envy, what do you think of?
Ego.
Okay. When you think of envy, what do you think of? Just tuning you in because you're...
Lack of contentment.
Lack of contentment. Anything else? Envy. When you think of envy.
Hiranyakashipu.
Other than Krishna. I am the controller.
Ishvaroham Ahambogi.
Snake.
Desire for something you don't have, but you think it's greater than the other person.
Say it again clearly.
Desire for you to have
something that someone else has. That's what you said first.
Who you think is superior than what you have.
Someone who is superior has something you wish you had, so that's envy towards that person. Yeah? Anything else? Any other examples besides Hiranyakashipu and a snake?
Envy
brings an unhappy state.
Kaliya.
Ravan. Shishupal. Ooh. Envy personified.
Ramchandra Khan.
He's a person in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, more specifically Haridas Thakur was born in a Muslim family, but in now Bangladesh, then Bengal. But he had Krishna Bhakti. And from childhood he was chanting Krishna's name. And he chanted incessantly Krishna's name, literally morning till night, chanting the holy name. And he became respected as a holy man in the place where he resided. And the place where he resided, there was an individual named Ramchandra Khan who couldn't stand the fact that he was so much respected. So I made a plan to disgrace him. Haridas Thakur.
That's different from Vinoba Thakur.
That's right. Haridas is the Namacharya for the holy name. He was elder to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur is a title of a learned person or elevated person, saintly person, Thakur. Or literally means Lord Thakur.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur is not an
actual person? Bhaktivinoda Thakur is definitely an actual person.
So you are saying Bhaktivinoda means...
No, Thakur means... Thakur is a title.
Lord.
Yeah. Or when addressing a person, it's a title of respect. So-and-so, like sir, or, you know, Lord Zetland.
Like Maharaj.
It's something like that. A little different. So this is Ramchandra Khan is an example of not only feature of envy is someone has something I wish I had, and so I envy that someone, because really it should belong to me. So a behavior along with coveting that which somebody else has, or feeling envious towards them for what they have, is one wants to see them come down. Prabhupada has described this about the position of a devotee is when someone is superior, they want to respect. Someone who is a peer, they want to associate and make friendship with them. Someone who is less fortunate, they want to serve and give some assistance to. But when one is envious, someone is a superior position, I need to bring them down. So that looks like I've just gone up. That's another kind of manifestation of enviousness. I don't like to see people up. I like to bring them down. And people that one is peers with, I compete with them so that I can be superior. And persons that are less fortunate step on their heads to get what I want. Envious. Or prakrita bhakta. So envy is a material quality, it's not a spiritual quality. One of the things that Prabhupada said about the difference between the spiritual world and the material world is everything that's in the spiritual world finds its counterpart in the material world, or vice versa, except for one thing. In the spiritual world, there's no envy. So it's a pretty important topic for our cook and offerer. It's something that we definitely need to identify, isolate, eliminate, and become transformed. So his first request is to say, what is its root cause? What's the root cause of envy? One of the things that's important to know, or at least to learn, is when there's envy of another person, ultimately that's but a manifestation of envy of Krishna. Because where does that person who has something that we're wishing we had, where do they get that something? From Krishna. So envy towards another person is nothing but a manifestation of envy towards Krishna. That's the root. And, well, what's the root of that one? What's the root of, why would we be envious towards Krishna? There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Raga Dvesha Samutena Dvandva Mohena Bharata. Moha is delusion, bewilderment. So if one becomes illusioned, or subject under the spell of illusion, one has an attitude toward Krishna of this duality of we desire the position of Krishna and we hate he who is actually in that position. Prabhupada gives the example of the man who wants to sit on the throne, the king's throne. So, I want to sit on the king's throne, but there's a problem. Someone's already sitting on the throne. So, I covet that position. Dvesha, I have animosity or envy towards he who has that position. But whoever's on the king's throne is the representative of God, if he's the proper king in any case. With any opulence that someone has, the whole lesson of chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita is any vibhuti or opulence in this world is but a spark of the opulent. So we're envious of the opulence, we're envious of the opulent, Krishna. So it's misuse of free will or an attitude problem toward Krishna. That's the root cause of envy. And to cure the problem, we have to change our attitude toward Krishna. And by that one stroke, the whole problem is finished. In one lecture in New York, Prabhupada was describing that the bhakti process is the blacksmith method. He was saying there's another method, the goldsmith method. The goldsmith. The goldsmith. Goldsmith has a little hammer, and he takes his little hammer and he goes tap, 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 tap. Tap, 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 tap. Takes many little taps. But the blacksmith puts the iron in the fire, raises his big hammer, puts it on the anvil, and done! One stroke, everything finished. That was Prabhupada's example. Everybody liked that example. By one central point, one essential point, that is changing our regard for Krishna from dvesha and raga to bhakti, to want to serve Krishna and want to please Krishna, then we can cure our envy problem and all other problems. So I'm already on remedial measure, which is the last. So the remedial measure is, supposing we have some envy towards another person, the ultimate that is, we correct our envy towards Krishna. And the way to correct our envy towards Krishna is to hear about Krishna, remember Krishna, serve Krishna, offer everything to Krishna. Everything becomes Krishna, Krishna. But not like Shishupal. Everything becomes Krishna. Rupa Goswami describes in one of his dramas that Shishupal had such envy. He's like the pinnacle of envy. I was thinking of Duryodhan. He was envious of the Pandavas. He particularly didn't like Bhima. So it was appropriate that Bhima finished him, but he just couldn't stand being around Bhima because he was so strong and just tossed the Kauravas around like cotton swabs when they were playing wrestling and, you know, chivalrous games of boys. He was just so powerful. He wanted to kill him. When Krishna came to make his plan for a peace settlement, his position was, I cannot stand being on the same planet with those Pandavas. Or Kaliya, another example. Vedashira was who he was in his previous life. He was so envious when another sage came to the same mountain to do austerities on the same mountain. His message was, there's not room for both of us in the same mountain. You're going to have to find another mountain. Envious. But Shishupal had such envy of Krishna that the day that he was born, like a newborn child might do, he cried. But he cried with a scream. Some children know how to do that. Scream. That he didn't stop screaming. He screamed all day long. And all night long, and the next day, and the next night, and the next day, and it went on for a whole month, and he was just screaming because he heard one of his relatives say Krishna's name. He had big envy of Krishna. Whenever he heard Krishna's name, it made his blood boil. He was seething. And the Rajasuya Yagya that he was being proclaimed as the chief personality was too much. It popped his cork. He lost it. So envious. He was perfectly Krishna conscious. Not filled with devotion, but he was always thinking of Krishna in envy. As Kamsa wasn't exactly envious, he was fearful. Kamsa was fearful because he heard that the eighth child of Devaki would kill him, and so he was always afraid. So he was always Krishna conscious too. Always thinking of Krishna. But Rupa Goswami says we shouldn't be Krishna conscious like that. We should be wanting to please Krishna, not afraid of Krishna or envious of Krishna. But calling Krishna's name in envy, or calling Krishna's name in fear, or even calling Krishna's name as Ajamila did, unintentionally, like meaning something else, but calling Krishna's name or calling Narayan's name unintentionally. That's a form of purification. So, Yudhisthira Maharaj, after the Rajasuya Yagya was over and Krishna was duly honored, Yudhisthira was sitting, the Pandavas were sitting with Narada Muni, who was their spiritual master, and he asked Narada Muni, it's right in the Bhagavatam, how did this happen? That this envious snake, that's another snake, is one without being provoked will cause someone pain and suffering. Just that you come near me and bite. Without provocation. Or scorpion. So, how is it that this envious snake, Shishupal, who had such animosity for Krishna, achieved liberation? How is it possible? Great ascetics and renunciates and yogis, they go to the forest and literally for lifetimes they try to achieve liberation, and they may not achieve liberation. And this mean-spirited person, we saw after his head was cut by the Sudarshan Chakra, his soul went hovering into the air. We all saw it and entered into the body of Krishna. He got liberation. How is that possible? Please explain. And Narada said, just see the potency of the holy name. Just like it's described by the Vishnu Dutas and by Shukadeva Goswami, even if the holy name is called in envy, like if one is clear enough to be envious of Krishna, not just envious of Krishna's opulences, but the person who possesses the opulence, and thinks of Krishna and calls Krishna's name in envy, it's very good. They get liberation, or they're entitling themselves to liberation. But it doesn't mean, okay, that's the path we should follow. We should become Kamsas and Shishupals and afraid of Krishna and inimical to Krishna and envious of Krishna. But Narada said, so what to speak of those who call the holy name with love and devotion? How effective that is. We should strive for that stage of life. but we actually have love for Krishna in our heart by regulative practices of sadhana bhakti. But so the cure for envy is to serve Krishna with love. And if, like Krishna says in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, if you can't do that, then follow the regulations of Bhakti Yoga. If you can't do that. So if there's envy towards another person, like there was a question the other day, what if we have a tendency to find fault with other persons? Same idea, you try to serve that person instead. Just like the first offense against the chanting of the holy name, to blaspheme the devotees of the Lord who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name. So that's an offense against the holy name. So one of the antidotes is just put something else on the other side of the pan scale. Instead of criticizing, you glorify. Instead of being envious of, you go and serve. Take the humble position before that person who you're feeling envy towards. And it's a particular, whether it's opulence of wealth or position or fame or recognition or something like that, we have this little lesson in our Gita camp for kids, because kids have learned in school to be competitive. It turns out that they've learned how to be competitive too much. And so one of the counselors at the camp thought it was a nice idea to have, you know, the best camper boy, best camper girl. And they were competing. And I informed the counselor, that's the opposite of how we're training our children. The training should be how to serve the other, how to take the humble position and be the servant of the other. Because I didn't even know it until some of the kids reported and said, you've been teaching us like this, and this other thing was there, and so was the best camper, but we didn't feel so good about the whole thing. So we're taking the children down this path of learning a very different approach than what you've learned at school, to compete, because compete means win-lose. And the whole game of win-lose is actually lose-lose. Because the one who wins becomes the object of envy of the one who loses. And it's the wrong spirit to begin with. The spirit should be the spirit of service. And that's Vaikuntha. In the spiritual world, the devotees are always eager to see who can please Krishna the most. And it's not who can please Krishna the most, I win. It's who can please Krishna the most, you're our favorite. So that favorite is eagerly pushed forward. There's a nice pastime of Radharani during the Julan Yatra. She's on the swing, swinging with Krishna, and the gopis, being non-envious, they just want to see Krishna happy. And they know that Radha is best at making Krishna happy. So they don't have any, you know, imagine this, a bunch of girls where one girl is always with the boy and the other girls are just assisting that one girl who's always with the boy to be with the boy and be happy with the boy. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen in the material world. But in the spiritual world, that's the program. But Radha is completely free from envy of her position, her own position, or coveting her own position. So she puts the other gopi on the swing and personally swings the swing. And then another gopi on the swing. There's a nice pastime described in Vedanta Madhava by Rupa Goswami, where Radha, wanting to see the happiness of her dear Lalita asks Krishna to swing on the swing with Lalita. And Krishna agrees, but Krishna says, I'll sit in the middle and you sit on both sides. And then they swing on the swing together. Dhriti Dasi, one of Prabhupada's disciples and artists for the BBT, made a beautiful painting of that. Lalita and Krishna and Radha. Because in the spiritual world there's no envy. It's Krishna's happiness means everything. And the happiness of Krishna means the happiness of Krishna's devotees. So they want to see Krishna's devotees happy because that brings happiness to Krishna. Whatever brings happiness to Krishna. And there's no room for envy. So as devotees, we want to see everybody go higher. Because when somebody goes higher, that means Krishna is more pleased, and Krishna is more pleased, that's our happiness. So we want to serve, see that others, everybody can go higher. And those that are already higher appreciate how high they are. And those that are our friends appreciate what wonderful service they're doing. And sharing, you know, our nice experiences of seeing how Krishna can be pleased and like that, back and forth. Always in the mood of service is the antidote for envy. So we've covered some of the symptoms, some of the remedial measure. One of the remedial measures is the same as prevention. Just try to stay always in a humble mood of service. In a humble mood of service, there's no room for envy. Remember, Rabindra Sarup Prabhu was discussing this topic, being the scholar that he is. He was sharing, there's sometimes, or say often, we find jealousy and envy used almost like synonymous. Envy and jealousy. Jealousy and envy. But dictionary-wise, there's a difference. And envy is more towards another person that has something that you want. Jealousy is used, at least in a strict sense, when it's used in a proper way in English language. It's we jealously guard something that we have. We want to keep other people away from what we have. So that's jealousy. Although we often use it conventionally, jealousy means somebody has something. You're jealous of them because they have something. And they seem to go well together, jealousy and envy. It's all about opulence or a position or recognition or fame or some attention. So we're with a group and someone's getting attention. And I'm not getting attention. So I feel bad because someone's getting attention and more importantly, I'm not getting attention. So, and if we get attention, then we get proud. Oh, I'm getting attention. It's as someone said, it's ego. It's the covering of the soul. And removing coverings of the soul, I think we've all noticed, it's not easy. And envy is something, it's just obvious. If everything that's in the spiritual world has its counterpart in the material world, except this one thing, there's no envy in the spiritual world, then it's a real prominent item in the material world. Everyone has it. As soon as you have one of these things, a material body, it's like a flag saying, I'm envious of Krishna. It's embarrassing. And therefore, immediately I want to use this thing for not for Krishna's service. Like that example I gave this afternoon. Such a simple example. Our hand, our ability to do something with our hand, it says something we do all the time. I want to pick up the books. I just pick up the book, and I think, you know, I'm doing something. But the fact of the matter is, it's not my hand or my power of grasping something, because fact, if Krishna takes that power away, my hand is paralyzed and I can't. So it's actually Krishna's hand and Krishna's ability, and therefore, the logical conclusion is, it should be used in Krishna's service. Really simple, really basic. And then to say, apply the same principle to everything, and that takes care of the jealousy problem, but one who is, or envy problem, but one who is envious can't see that. Listening at lunch to an arrival address where Prabhupada was interviewing, it was being interviewed by a few reporters, and the reporter asked, "Swamiji, what is your message that you've come here to give everybody?" And Prabhupada said, "I've come to remind you what you've forgotten." The devotees laughed. He said, "Well, what's that? What have we forgotten?" And Prabhupada said that you have these ideas that are so misleading, that God is dead or there is no God, and so many other ideas in relation to God. And I've come to remind you that you have, and convince you that God exists. He was very strong. God exists, and you're fully dependent upon Him, and you should serve Him with everything that God has given you. That is my teaching, and you, that's my message. And you do like that, and you become happy. All this moroseness and fighting and dissension in Kali Yuga will be gone. Just take this one thing. It's dismissing this one thing called envy, and let Krishna be served. But it's not that, so just wrap up some points here. It's not just that Krishna should be served and we don't concern ourselves with others. Or the other way around, we just concern ourselves with others and we don't concern ourselves with Krishna. Both are quite incomplete. But when we're serving others, it's the consciousness should be because as they are in relation to Krishna, or using Rupa Goswami's language, Krishna is the object, and this living entity is part and parcel of Krishna, so therefore they are to be served as part and parcel of Krishna. He's the object of our service. Here's a part and parcel of Krishna. They are to receive our service, and that way we're serving Krishna, by serving his part and parcel. The link between the living entity and God is understood as we're rendering our service. And it's unto Krishna that we're serving. So we can't neglect the parts of the living entities who are Krishna's parts and parcels in serving Krishna. We should serve the living entities who are Krishna's parts and parcels in the mood of pleasing Krishna. And as he indicates how we should serve them. And that's our process of devotional service. Okay, so any discussion on this lively topic? Yes. Yes.
I have a small question. Humility.
Humility. Okay.
What is the application of humility? Like, how do you practice humility? Like, in your work life, at home, in devotees on the stage, anywhere. Like, just some simple examples, like how can one be humble?
You've asked two different questions.
I'm not quite sure exactly how to ask, but basically I'm trying to understand. It's very important.
Yes, it is. How to be humble is one thing, and how to exhibit it is another thing.
Yes, both of them.
Both of them. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches there's no question of humility without a spiritual conception. Or say it the other way around. Any sense of humility that's based on the bodily conception of self is a mental adjustment. It's not what real humility is. And that mental adjustment, all it takes is whatever our threshold is, and that humility is lost. It just disappears into anger. Somebody pushes our button and we lose our humility and it becomes anger. So that's not... Something that's real is permanent. Yes? According to Bhagavad Gita teaching. Sat is real. And sat is permanent. So humility is permanent. It's not created by circumstance. In this circumstance I'm humble, in that circumstance I lose it. That's not what humility is. It's not circumstantially created. It's on the platform of the soul. Okay. That's a third question. Okay, that's okay. But let's say, what does being humble mean? It means on the platform of the soul. But one place to start, bless you, one place to start is hear message of the scripture very carefully, because the message of the scripture is the spiritual conception. It's how Krishna sees. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, he's describing reality. And that's how Krishna sees things. So we can try to see with the spiritual conception. Not the covering of the soul, not the behavior of the person, but the soul. To see on the platform of the soul, Pandita Samadarshana, then one can be, like our Bhagavatam verse the other morning, Samadvam, Pandita Samadarshana. One can be equipoised. In all circumstances, remain humble on the platform of the soul. So we may not be there, but now this is how to, by hearing and by practice. So what Krishna says, that's not really our topic. Our topic is envy, but you asked. So we practice in the beginning just being tolerant. Tolerant, specifically. By knowledge we can understand that which provokes us away from the humble position is sense perception only. Sense perception means, specifically, samsparsha ja. The senses contacting the sense object, and then we get a read on that. That the read says, I like it, or I don't like it. Happiness, distress, hot, cold, honor, dishonor, just how we read it. It's just how we read it. It's just the senses coming in. It's the orientation of the mind. I'll give a little example from a book on communication that Brajavihari was suggesting. It'd be good for people to read. The title of the book is, I Didn't Mean That. So, one of the examples in the book was, an American tourist was in England, and they knew that people outside of America think the ugly American tourist who comes and throws their money around and, you know, big egos and, you know, they don't like So they decided, you know, they went with the mood of not doing that. So they sat down at a cafe. The cafe was crowded, so they had to share a booth with somebody else. And there was a young couple across, and it was an American woman. So she thought, I better not, it would be polite if I, you know, don't interfere with their communication and just, you know, keep to myself. So this lady came and she made her order. She was, you know, just keeping to herself. And at a certain point, they turned to her and said, why are you being so rude? And she thought, why are they saying, why am I being so rude? I'm just trying to not be, you know, a disturbance for them. And she said, well, what do you mean? He said, you know, you Americans, you're so cold. You come and sit down, sit at the same table, and you don't even say hello. But her intention was to be polite and be nice and be respectful. But the reading of it was something else. So, you know, the distress is in the mind. So the initial teaching that Krishna gives, it goes in layers or in levels. Tolerate. The sense of being provoked is just sense perception and how the mind reads it. Just tolerate it. The higher position is to be not at all influenced by it. I mean, not even have to tolerate it, like, okay, but I'll tolerate it. But it just doesn't affect you. And then the highest position is there's such happiness. This other thing is, it's illusion. You know, it's what it really is. It's ephemeral illusion. So from our position, you're how to practice humility, cultivate humility, follow Krishna's instructions. That's the beginning. Beginning is to be tolerant. And then where do you put, if you're going to tolerate the provocation, you have to put your attention somewhere else. Put your attention on sat. Tolerate the asat and put your attention on sat. Direct your attention. Invest consciousness in that which is eternal. On the spontaneous platform, that's a regulative direction. As one cultivates Krishna consciousness further and further, then the mind is just absorbed in thought of Krishna. I was noticing during our kirtan this afternoon, there was some people were coming in while some other people were sitting, and some devotees were just really absorbed in the kirtan. And one of the children came along and practically knocked one of the other people, one of the kirtan participants over. But they didn't respond negatively. They were just like, you know, just moving with the kirtan. They were so absorbed in the kirtan, it wasn't like, hey. When there's a higher happiness, this other thing, this disturbance, becomes insignificant. Like the classic example, when rivers pour into the ocean is not disturbed because the ocean is so full. So if we're so full with happiness on the spiritual platform, that humility remains. One isn't provoked by circumstances. But then it's no longer just tolerate. But we have to earn the right to become full with spiritual happiness. by cultivating humility. So back on the topic of envy, any input on this one? Yes?
What if you are the object of envy and there are a large number of people and then it's difficult to serve each one of them?
And then what was the last part?
I mean, you are with so many materials.
I got that part.
So
let's say you're in the workplace and there's a lot of envy floating around.
Yeah, and then it's difficult to serve each one of them.
Then from your heart you carry that disposition. You can. You, so another thing, be their well wisher instead of, you know, digging, getting down in the trenches and getting dirty with them. You're going to deal with me like that. You watch. I can deal dirty too. And just be their well wisher. Because those who are in that position of strong envy, they're suffering. And so see that feature. They may be behaving in this very unpleasant way, but what's their own experience? They're very unhappy. So one can feel compassion for that fact, that they're so out of touch with themselves and their very source of happiness within. They must be suffering so much. In fact, Prabhupada recently heard him describing in a lecture like that. If somebody insults you, one way, as an antidote, like this humility, to understand, one level, Prabhupada said, is to understand, oh, they're just foolish, I'm not going to take it seriously. But another is to see they're actually suffering so much to behave like that. They're suffering so much. You feel compassion. What can I do? Even if you don't actually have an outlet for that, the answer to that question, the vibration, you know, the mood that you're giving is not just tolerance, but compassion. So Krishna may give some channel for you to act in a compassionate way. Maybe not, but at least one doesn't get drawn into that mood. Yes.
You talked about that when you're feeling envious, that you should hear about and chant about Krishna more. And I guess what I'm wondering is that I can kind of understand, like, with the pastimes that you described with Lalita and Radharani, how Krishna's example, how even when you hear about someone who's not envious, that can inspire you. Or
yeah. Yeah, definitely.
How does specifically the chanting of the holy name helps one change their behavior?
Well, everything is in the holy name. All Nitya Sarva Shaktis, all of Krishna's potencies are there. So we may not unpack all those transcendental potencies, but they're all there. Or we can place our mind upon some particular aspect of Krishna. Like in the Krishna book, it specifically said one who feels lust should read this section from the Srimad Bhagavatam of Krishna's, the absence of lust in his dealing with the gopi. Or like this example of Krishna subduing Kaliya. By hearing this pastime, all that is envious within the heart is removed. There's potency in Krishna's taking from our hearts, the sadhakas, who are approaching Krishna. Krishna protects us from that very tendency within ourselves. And by hearing and describing and remembering that pastime, that effect is there. There's another remedial measure. So hearing about Krishna, as soon as I'm done with this question, I got you. Okay. Personalities who exhibit an amazing degree of freedom from envy. Haridas Thakur. Although Ramchandra Khan was envious of Haridas Thakur, he was completely not envious, not, you know, in retaliatory spirit towards Ramchandra Khan. Or the Qazi who wanted to kill him by having him beaten to death in all the markets of Puglia. He was completely forgiving. And it was totally disarming. The king ended up accepting Haridas Thakur as a great saint, although he literally had him condemned to death. He was begging Haridas Thakur for forgiveness. So, no, that's another. Is this in Puliyat, which is in near Mayapur? Another pastime, similar in nature, in which someone wanted to harm Haridas Thakur, only this other case was more direct. It wasn't by conspiring against him. It was he brought him before the king or before the Qazi and asked the Qazi to punish him. And when the Qazi asked what punishment, he said he should be killed. Beaten to death in the marketplaces of Puglia, so that no one else will make the same mistake. They'll understand what a terrible person Haridas Thakur is and how one will be punished in this kingdom if you do like this. So, go ahead, you've got your...
My question is... Yes.
Okay.
Question is, other side of being humble is... Sometimes you are humble, but then
the people take advantage.
The other party is always taking advantage of you.
Okay. Now, the transcendentalist understands the one who is trying to take advantage of you is hurting himself. The one who is to be genuinely humble, back to this first question, what does it mean to be humble? It's to be on the spiritual platform. When you're on a spiritual platform, the understanding of Krishna's shelter is there. When the understanding of Krishna's shelter is there, another person is trying to take advantage of you. Krishna is not pleased by that. So that other person is hurting himself. Now, another point about humility is if it's the right behavior, not because of self-preservation or, you know, correcting injustice or some other thing like that, but just it's the right behavior. It's beneficial for the other person. That one can take some strong action. Like Arjuna took some strong action because Krishna wanted it. Although from his side, he was ready to tolerate. There's this conventional story of one serpent who is normally considered to be an envious creature became so moved by Narada Muni that he asked if Narada Muni would accept him as a disciple. And Narada Muni said yes. So he became a disciple of Narada Muni. And when the public, the boys in the village, found out he has become like this, they started taunting him and teasing him and throwing stones and hitting him with sticks. And so he went, next time Narada came, he said, what do I do that I'm being taken advantage of by my humility? And Narada said, well, I never said you can't raise your hoods. So one may take an action or speak in such a way that, you know, something that's hurtful for the individual can be checked. But the mood should be in a mood of service. That's the message. Before acting or reacting, consider what's appropriate for the situation to bring the other individual up, to serve the other individual. It's challenging to do that, but that's the teaching. That's the antidote.
My question, you had example about Krishna and Radha and somebody else.
Lalita.
What is that example again? What was that?
Here's the example. Beginning? Here's the example. Radha was considering the happiness of Krishna. because what else does Radha consider? And she was also so much appreciative of the non-envious service of Lalita. Lalita is always by Radha's side to please Radha and her loving relationship with Krishna. So she made this proposal to Krishna. Why don't you swing on the swing with Lalita? So Krishna agreed. He said, I'll sit in the middle and Lalita will sit on this side, you sit on that side. And they swung on the swing together. As an example of Lalita's not envious of Radha, Radha's not envious of Lalita. Their relationship is devoid of that quality of envy. Yes.
I know that as in the process of learning things, like right now we learned about how we should overcome envy and things, we realize the mistake and we know that we've done certain things in the past which might have hurt people. So there are two things. One, we're not sure if we will learn quickly and avoid these things. And the second thing is, now what about people whom we've already hurt because of all our
thoughts? Good question. Prabhupada was asked that question.
The question
was, we've been hearing about hurting other people because of wrong action, particularly about envious action. So what about those persons who we didn't know, but we did something that hurt them? And the other was,
we may do it again,
even we know now we shouldn't do. Okay, so the ones that we did in the past, we didn't even know it, we just hurt people. Prabhupada's teaching was, therefore every day I've instructed my disciples that we offer this prayer, vancha kalpa thruvyascha kripa sindhu vyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namo. You know that one. And it should be, you know, not just a ritual that we say, reciting in a mindless manner, but genuinely calling upon those who may be in our presence and maybe not in our presence, maybe in the past and maybe presently with us, that we've done things that unknowingly have been hurtful. So we're offering our obeisances unto them. And those that are immediately present, we literally offer our obeisances to. And those hurtful things in the future that may appear, well, we're responsible for them. We're responsible for them. It's not like, oh, just I'm a devotee, I just say this nice little mantra and go cruising. We're responsible for we do hurtful things. And therefore, as we become more educated, like, you know, have more knowledge, we guard against that. And if inadvertently something comes, then we go to that devotee, not like call out to the wind. We go to that devotee and ask forgiveness. Have you ever done that? Ask forgiveness of devotees that you've done that, right? Not yet. Yes, you have.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, you have. You've shared with me that you've done it. So you should do like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Many people.
So when it comes to your attention that it happens, as it comes to your attention immediately, sometimes we know even as we're doing something, this doesn't feel right. Immediately catch yourself and apologize. I mean, you know, immediately. And it's not, you know, a Vaishnava is not thinking, I might lose an advantage here if I apologize that I'm in this humble position and then I'm in this lesser position and they are in the bigger position. I don't like that, so I won't apologize. That's the wrong idea. I'm not saying you, I'm just speaking in principle. sometimes that checks a devotee from... I've made hundreds and hundreds of apologies for something that actually I didn't even do. But the person felt something. So I apologize that they're feeling that something. I did. My existence has made you feel that way. I apologize for that. Genuinely. Not like, this is ridiculous. But if there's something about my being my existing in such a way it causes somebody some discomfort. It's not. I'm sorry for that. Genuinely. I wish I didn't have to cause somebody some discomfort. And many cases it's a misunderstanding. Like, the American lady sitting in the cafe thinking, and I wanted to do something to help another person, and the other person thought, why are they doing this? I'm giving them their space. I'm respecting them. And they take it in a different way. Or I'm saying something that's meant to be a compliment or do something that's meant to help them, and they ask, why are you doing that? I thought we talked about it, and I thought that was the understanding, and I'm sorry that there wasn't such a good communication here. I'm really sorry. Yes.
Generally it is said that when you meet an envious person, we should just avoid that person. It's also said that a saintly person rejoices at the killing of a saint, an envious snake or a serpent. And also we see examples of Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur, who showed such great compassion towards envious people. So what should be our approach when dealing with some people who may have some envy towards us?
We have to know what your capacity is, right? We're not of the capacity of Haridas Thakur and Lord Nityananda. Far from it. But the audience that we have, there's certainly abundance of envy. So what to do? We don't have that capacity, but that's the audience. So we have to be, to a degree, selective and to a large degree, tolerant. Just like when you do your book distribution in the mall, there's some people that say, oh, this is wonderful. There's some other people say, other things. And that's okay. And you can go to the next person. So then it's confidential things. We're more careful what we say or with those persons. Confidential teachings or ways of devotional service and so on. And as far as, that an envy is, like Prabhupada described, because it says in scripture, when Hiranyakashipu was killed, one of the prayers to Lord Nrisimhadeva is, everyone is now happy, just like when a serpent is killed. So the sages are very happy. But his position didn't change from service. His position was, can you please release my father from all the reactions for all of his wrongdoings? And Lord Nrisimhadeva's reply was, well, that's already done because he's your father and he's been killed by me, so ask for something else. But the disposition of Prahlad was not... When we're interacting with persons that have envy, we should try, to our capacity, we should try to maintain the position of being their well-wishers. And whether we interact with that person or not, maintain the position of their well-wishers. Again, as point earlier discussed, they're suffering. They're suffering very badly. Persons that are angry, envious, greedy, all those bad things, they're suffering. And they're hoping that something outside in this very negative way is going to bring them happiness. How much more suffering? So, compassion. Be their well-wisher.
How do we understand that pastime that Krishna had with Viraj? And there was a guard and Radharani came in and they ended up, Radharani ended up cursing the guard and vice versa. And he cursed her to be separated from Krishna for 100 years and forget what the other side was.
That's from the Tamasic Purana. And our Vaishnava Acharyas don't even speak about that. Because there's a Tamasic Purana. There's, conversely, there's the ill feeling that Mother Sachi was holding towards Advaita Acharya. And look what Mahaprabhu did. He came charging to that place with his hand raised as if to hit his mother, the best of all devotees. And Advaita Acharya was, stop. I can't tolerate the criticism of my devotee. Mother Sachi has to fall at your feet. And Advaita Acharya, she's the mother of the universe. How can she fall at my feet? No. But she was very happy to fall at Advaita Acharya's feet. So that's our Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding. These Tamasic Puranic stories, one should be very careful. Our Acharyas have taken from those Rajasic and Tamasic Puranas things that are in line with Sattvic teachings, and those are the narrations that we should give our attention to and avoid the other ones. Anything else? Nice discussion. Yes. Yeah, the kids are shouting while you're speaking. Go ahead. Yeah.
And, like, you know, I've had at least two relationships like that where just, like, I intend all well. I'm very clear in my heart, but repeatedly the things I'm supposed to do. And, you know, ask for forgiveness, reassure the other person, but it just keeps going. So, what do you really do in such a situation? Because, my heart is clear that I'm not having this.
Here's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends in Harinam Chintamani. You continue to go back to that person. You just continue to go back to that person and ask for forgiveness. And enough times that it gives, you know, ample opportunity. There's not, and then remaining is just chant the holy name. That's what to do. Go ahead. No. Yes.
When I'm practicing the humility.
Yeah.
So, I'm being, as you said, that I'm beginning with the tolerance. But if at all it's it's leading to the ignoring the person. So how can I be in that humble mode of that tolerance?
Well, first of all, don't ignore the other person. Ignoring doesn't equal tolerance. And I think the answer that I gave, going way back to what is humility, is an answer to your question. Real humility is on the spiritual platform. And when it's on the spiritual platform, that which is provoking you is duality. It's not absolute. It's not you, it's not them, it's not the relationship. It's duality. Where does a duality arise from? Sense perception. Do you tolerate it? You don't invest consciousness in that dynamic of what's provoking you. Here's what a college student at our Japa retreat, our Penn State student, young girl, first time. She was appreciating what she was getting from the weekend she spent with us. And she said, I've got an anger problem. You heard this the other day? I'll say it again. I have an anger problem, she was saying. Not really bad, not like, you know, I have to go to anger management, but the kind of anger that something provokes me, and my mind goes to that something. Why did they say that? Why did they do that? Why? And my mind just dwells on that thing, and it just gets bigger and bigger, and whoa, it gets so big, and I have all these feelings that I don't like at all. But I am stuck. I don't know what to do. I don't like it, but I can't get away from it because it's consuming me. But now I know what to do. She said, I just put it on the shelf and go and do my yoga and chant my mantra and enter that sacred space and stay there for a while. And then I can go back to the shelf and look at that thing and address it in a, you know, a proper way. That was her way of saying. So ours, you be in the mood of service towards that person, and whatever that thing is, I have no control over that thing. But I should have control of my mind. Let my mind go to a mood of wanting to serve Krishna and serving Krishna's devotees, and that's what my responsibility is. And I certainly can't be of good service to others if I'm in this other, you know, duality thing. So stay in the mood of service. Cultivate that. And from those activities that give you that spiritual strength and purity, primarily chanting and reading and worshiping, and those things that give you spiritual strength, then you take that spiritual strength to that situation and address it in a proper mood. Those that haven't had their... Yeah, good.
In the spiritual sense?
The natives are restless in the back, so you got to speak up.
What are the positive things you have to take in? What are the negative things you have to give up?
Well, sometimes we want to give them up, but we don't want to give them up. We maintain them. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjana.
In that way, which one should be more important? Because I fear that if we give the
sankalpa should be given more importance. The bhajana kriya should be given more importance. And in the strength of the bhajana kriya, that gives us capacity to let go of the unwanted things. That comes first and foremost, and continuous attention. All right?
Maharaj just asked the same thing. When we apply these things, suppose in the job, we are the two guy, and suppose I got the promotion, and another guy is jealous to that. So, how to end it? Same thing in the spirituality. If someone is giving us the lots of respect and they praise lots of, they pay obeisance and might be with some devotee, they are engaged to that things. So indirectly, I am the object for them. Then. So how to avoid
that? It's unavoidable. And so, you know, how others may feel towards that is unavoidable. But what your responsibility is to be always humble. And so that always humble person may be the object of another person's envy, but it just rolls off them like water off a duck's back. It's not, doesn't stick on you. You just maintain the position of being very humble and stay there. In the realm of devotional service, just go on serving in a genuinely humble way. And in the workplace, whatever it is that brought about the promotion, it's not, you know, the next thing could be a demotion or you're fired. You know, it's all very unstable in the workplace. So you don't get all absorbed in that program. You know, the ups and the downs and the, all around the town. It's just, we were discussing that today. But you know, your shelter is Krishna. Not the promotion, or you got it, or the other guy got it. It's, your shelter is Krishna. And just do a conscientious, do it for Krishna kind of effort. And Krishna is your shelter. And by your being, because you're a devotee, that will, the internal potency of Krishna will act with that other person in such a way to give them an opportunity, unlike if you weren't a devotee, at least since you are a devotee, to learn something. Krishna's internal potency will act, and how that's going to be, that's up to Krishna. But we can be confident of that for their benefit, and so you can be looking for some opportunity of how I can serve this other person. Genuinely. Not like ward off their envy, but think how to serve them. That's how a devotee thinks. Although my position now may be, you know, greater, I'm not thinking that's who I am. I'm thinking I'm a servant. How can I serve them? It's very disarming. Someone who hasn't spoken yet would like to. If not, we'll do one, two, and then we'll end. Go ahead.
I was just thinking that in general amongst devotees, we don't see so much like the gross kind of envy, that like the intention is really like to bring someone down.
Yeah, we don't see Ramchandra Khans floating around. Or Shishupals. Or...
So it seems like many times it's actually their own deep insecurities, their own need for like feeling even like self-worth, you know, some validation, which actually leads to these kind of behaviors, envious behaviors.
Therefore, spiritual shelter is, the spiritual position is really what's, if we can be agents to help others come to that spiritual position, that's the best service we can do. Whatever the cause, the prompt. Last question.
Yeah, he was talking about positive and negative and sankalpa.
Yeah, sankalpa and vikalpa.
Sankalpa.
Vikalpa.
What does that mean?
The mind has two functions, accepting and rejecting. Sankalpa and vikalpa, accepting and rejecting. So there's a verse in the Padma Puran that describes the process of surrender. There's six things, six items of surrender. Two of them are accepting, this is what the mind does, accepts that which is favorable for devotional service, and it rejects that which is unfavorable for devotional service. Anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya varjanam. Sankalpa, vikalpa. Accepting, rejecting. And the criterion for that, for one who's on the path of surrender to Krishna, is what's favorable for devotional service. Or what's going to be pleasing to Krishna? Oh, that's going to be pleasing to Krishna? Let me accept it. Oh, that's going to be displeasing to Krishna? Let me reject it. So his question was, which is more important? And it's the sankalpa part. because from that we get direct contact with Krishna, more strength to get rid of the things that we don't want. The children need to join kirtan because they've got their own little kirtan going. So, can we get a little kirtan? Is our host able to come and sing with us? Can you see?